Ji and the officials of our department, I'm not sure it's official, but it's internal audit committee of the department, am I right? Together with Mr. Kanderson, you are all welcome. Our ministries, liaison officers, and as well as that of the department, you are welcome, honorable members. I think before we start, it will be proper that we introduce ourselves, since we are joined today by the internal audit committee, so that they know who they are talking to, and we also are familiar with who we are now will be talking to today. My name is Maggie Mawunya. I chair the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. On my right, it's Mr. N, not right, but left. It's Mr. Matonzi, who is our committee secretary. On the right, it's Mr. Salmon, who is our researcher. And I will let members introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, everyone. My name is Gary Peterson, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Afternoon, everybody. My name is Grace Bosman, a member of this portfolio committee.
Afternoon. My name is Mpho Khazebonwe, and a member of the portfolio committee.
Hey, Madwen, good afternoon. And the one behind the pillar, the name is Marcus Zole Masela, a member of this committee.
Afternoon. My name is Dilma Teve, a member of the committee.
We have Nandi Pamatuan, who is also assisting the secretary. She moves in and out doing her work. She is also part of the secretary. May I give over to Diki to introduce the members? Thank you. Honourable members, I'm not sure whether we will be dealing with minutes today. I'm worried that if we take that through, we are going to spend more time on minutes, and we might finish a bit late. And other people have mentioned that they will be going back home. So I wanted to propose that we flag the minutes for our next meeting. We will adopt them in our next meeting. Do we agree? We were also supposed to adopt the report of the department. I'm not sure whether we should do that today, because we dealt with that report last week in our last meeting. Why we did not adopt the report is because of the IEC recommendations that they were not part of the report, and so we asked the secretary and researcher to go and do the additions. So maybe I will just go through them, or if members feel that they want to have the full report, it's up to you. I'll be directed by the members. I forgot that we don't have a quorum, even if we wanted to adopt the report today. We are 2, 4, 6, okay. Or maybe to ask Nandipa to go and make more copies of the reports so that each member has his or her copy. Are they there?
Yeah.
Okay. Members, have you got the reports? Oh, okay. Then there's no need for me to read. I'm sure members can go through the IEC report in the in that report. I'm told it's at the end of the document. There is the last. It's 4.18 of our report. So we won't be able to adopt the report as well. If we don't have a quorum, we will adopt it next week. And we cannot continue with our budget vote if we haven't adopted our report. So it's important that next week, Tuesday, we are all here to be able to adopt the report, because on Thursday we will be debating the budget vote. We are in agreement. We are flagging it. If we do have a quorum, we will maybe adopt the report, but if we don't, then we will flag it also for next week, our next meeting. Can I then hand over to DG?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the Honourable Member. We are here, the Department, to present on two areas of the Department, monitoring and evaluation, and as well as internal audits. Chair, as a way of background, that as government is saying that we are good in coming up with the policies and objectives which are clear, but what difficulty is in the implementation. So in the past, traditionally, our internal audit function as government has been more looking at the compliance issue, whether we comply with the National Treasury Regulations, and comply with the Public Finance Management Act, with the procurement. Then now an additional angle was added of the performance information. But currently, the Auditor General is not yet giving an opinion on the performance information to allow departments to build processes which must be able to make sure that their objectives are smart, and that those objectives are able to be verifiable and measurable. So then departments have been encouraged to come up with this unit, which we call monitoring and evaluation, to assist the department in making plans properly, and then have processes to make sure that we can evaluate whether those things are achievable or not. So, Chair, we are here to start with a part of the monitoring. What do we have as a department, how we are making sure that we are starting to make sure that our objectives are clear. So Dr. Carlson will be making that presentation. And then after that, we have the internal audit, which has got a mandate to evaluate independently of the department. So internal audit is not reporting to the DG functionally. That reporting to me only administratively to say they take a leave, this is their budget, and all that. But they report to an independent committee, which is internal audit, which is appointed in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, to the Treasury Regulation. And that committee also lies with me only on administrative purposes, but they have the right to report to the Minister, Auditor General, and National Treasury, anything they pick in the department. So we appointed a new committee after 2012. So the committee have already met with the minister. There is an arrangement that on a quarterly basis, they will go independently and report to the minister how is the department performing. So the chair of the committee had a commitment to them. But as Kinusi introduced her, she is here to represent the audit committee on the report they will be giving today. So that's how it was. So the chapter, Mr. Pearson, within the report it will be contained. We have the audit CEA for the department, but because of issues of disciplinary processes, that CEA was suspended in the department. But because that is a critical area, we couldn't sit without a person. So National Treasury seconded to us Mr. Pearson, who is working in that position at the moment.
I want to do certain things. So we'll start with the doctor person, and then thereafter, if it will depend on that the committee want us to get questions after Dr. Kansen's report, or we'll present both of them and then take the questions at the end, we'll be guided by the committee.
Titi, if you could just start from the beginning with the appointment of Mr. Jason, am I pronouncing right? Because I don't understand you. You went slow. Yes.
What I'm saying, Chairperson, is that as a department, we had somebody that's been appointed as our chief audit executive. But what happened is that that person was suspended due to some issues which we're dealing with. But because this unit of internal audit, I must say, is critical in terms of PFMA and treasury regulations, as a department we have to approach national treasurers to second somebody to head the unit. So Mr. Pearson is from national treasurer, but seconded to the Department of Home Affairs while we're dealing with that matter. So we make sure that internal audit function is continue, because if we don't do that, then it will be a matter with the auditor general. Okay. Thanks, Acha. Let me hand over again now to Dr. Kansel to take us on the M&E. Once he finishes, then we'll hand over to Mr. Pierre.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. It's very good that you give us this opportunity to explain our processes so that we really value your advice on these matters. And it will give you a better basis to advise us and guide us and understand us. The monitoring of compliance in the department, as I say, has got various aspects, but they are according to a framework which is devised by the National Treasury and revised now and again. And there are three basic elements of that. The cycle, such as when we have to produce plans and annual reports and budgets and so on, and then the standards that we have to set ourselves in terms of budgeting and planning and reporting, and then the key documents, they specify exactly how we should report on critical documents such as the annual report, and then the Auditor General audits us against those standards. And we don't see these things as being unfriendly. We actually think that well-structured reporting and planning is very important to us delivering against our mandate. Essentially, I'm going to take you through how we go about this, what M&E consists of, and internally and internal and external reporting, and what we're trying to do to strengthen compliance. And the purpose, as well, I'm going to go into the purpose of M&E, which just goes beyond compliance. I'm not going to go straight to performance monitoring and respond to audit findings. And you know very well what I'm talking about. We've reported on this a few times here, but you yourselves have said that some of our targets were actually difficult to report against. So we went back to Parliament, which is highly unusual, and we, with the help of the auditors, we strengthened our targets mid-year with an errata document. And then the dates, when it says the auditors were asked to review targets and indicators as 2013-14, it's this current financial year. We showed them our current targets, and the year has just started in April the 1st, and they said it's greatly improved. They can find nothing wrong in the targets themselves, provided we give details on how we're going to measure them. It's called indicator description sheets, key performance indicator sheets, which say exactly how you're going to measure your targets. Provided we complete those accurately, they don't find any problems with the current targets. And part of that is the assistance rendered by this committee in critiquing last year's targets. So again, we see the auditors as a useful resource. If you hear us saying bad things about them, it's that they're chasing us on some issue, but generally we really welcome the engagement of the department. The chief director at M&E is fully staffed. I think it's got about 12 posts all filled, which is probably above the norm for a lot of departments. And we have nodal points in branches that help coordinate reports. They do other jobs, like they usually coordinate in the office of the DG, but we develop them professionally to be able to report properly according to the norms and standards. And apart from briefing them regularly, we've collaborated with the University of Stellenbosch and other institutions to run short training courses. This booklet is an example of some of the material we use to popularize or to educate people about M&E. We've been doing roadshows in provinces, and there's a major project now underway to establish a very robust M&E, maybe a chief directorate on its own possibly, but strengthen it greatly with a statistician and other measures. So we want to use M&E as a major lever for transformation in the department. When you see the vision of M&E and its purpose, you'll understand that it's, as I say, much more than compliance. To evaluate, communicate continuous performance so that people are performance, culture excellence and service develops, especially service to the people of the country, and evaluate how you're doing. And we want all managers to have M&E in their heads, so to speak, in their hearts, to monitor how we execute our mandate against the needs of the public. And very important, all departments have under pressure from the Treasury and auditors and their own ministers, monitor a bit better than they used to, but very few of us evaluate. To evaluate, you must get in expert researchers to analyze the impact of a policy or how you're doing. And the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, the president has been established to drive both evaluation and monitoring. And we're negotiating with them to evaluate aspects, to bring in a team of evaluators, a joint project next year. I haven't briefed the DG yet, so I better not say anymore. But they have a national evaluation program, and they would like us to be part of that. So that evaluation is different from monitoring. And basically, if you don't evaluate, monitor and evaluate, your plans are not based on evidence. You don't know how you've done, and then you still plan based on a misconception of how you're doing. It's a critical thing for accountability and transparency, which is the business of this committee. It's not just this committee, which needs an accurate picture of how Home Affairs is doing, its social development, its intelligence agencies. We have many stakeholders who need accurate information on how we're doing. And, you can't base budgeting, planning, and policy unless you have good information. And it's a challenge in South Africa for, governments hasn't yet learned to produce consistent, good information, but part of that is having a good monitoring and evaluation system. The objective, as I say, to track performance, to make sure what we do is aligned with government initiatives. So if rural development is a critical priority in South Africa, which it is, and we need to monitor how our footprint is expanding in rural areas, what is the actual presence of mobile units, how many of them are in the field, how many of them are sitting in the garage. So you really need to align our performance with that of the whole of government. And then the cascading policy and strategy down to the lowest levels in the department, you need to track how it's going. You can sit at head office and think things are going very well. I never forget in the Eastern Cape, I was in charge of school building, amongst other things, and we used to curse principals for giving us wrong data on school toilets. Till I went and to visit schools, and the number of toilets depended on how high the grass was, because if the grass was very high, they couldn't count the same toilet as when the grass was low. Those were pit latrines. So, as I say, M&E forces you out of your comfort zone, if it's well done, and into those schools to see the real situation. And to align, we need accurate metrics in order to base our proper strategy. For example, in hospitals, we now have over 244 hospitals where we have a presence, and we need to know how effectively that's working, how many babies are actually born in those hospitals, and of those, how many we register. So if you don't have metrics, you cannot really judge how effective it is, your strategy is. And, you know, we need management information to support audits and other things, external, various external needs. You know, I mean, when we report on our strategic plans every quarter to this committee, and I must say it's a very good discipline coming in and reporting on our quarterly progress. Managers have to give us that information. They have to give it to us on time. And they must make internal arrangements. If they can't measure things, they must put in place systems to measure things. And we want them to measure within a few days of the end of the quarter. We need to get their inputs and start processing them. We have discovered that Treasury allows up to 60 days before we have to report it after the end of the quarter, but we like to get our report ready within 30 days and then just check the data before we give it to Treasury, because we're audited against that. Internal monitoring is both financial and non-financial. There's reporting required, and that we have to report on our expenditure and our performance against our targets, and as I say, we need to share that with Treasury and with the Presidency and with yourselves. But before we do that, we go through internal processes. We have all senior managers together for 2 days every quarter and a sample of frontline staff. And the internal audit unit audits us, have a rolling program of auditing what we say at those meetings and the evidence that we produce. So they actually follow the same procedures in audit. They would say take 400 IDs that were produced. They actually want all the documents from the date of application through to finality delivery to the client, and if there's a discrepancy, which can happen, for example, if it's a mobile unit, the application is taken 2 days before it's captured in office. So that 2 days appears when the internal audit did its work, and they discovered we have to explain that sometimes there's a two-day delay, or there's a power failure in capturing a document, which accounts for a discrepancy. But they use extremely thorough methodology, which picks up every hitch and glitch in a process, and that's useful for developing future, designing the processes and risk management. And to come to risk management, one of the directorates, as you hear from BSN, is a full directorate for risk managing risks. When I joined the department 6 years ago, there was no such, we didn't even know what the word risk management meant, which shows how far we've come. We now know quite a lot about it. We produce a risk register and so on. External monitoring, when we've done our work internally, as I said, we have to give quarterly performance reports. That's discussed by the minister in her meeting with top management. It's given over to the Presidency and Treasury, and it feeds into the annual report. We also base reports to the clusters and to Public Service Commission, DPSA. I'll show you just now, our reporting is actually very complex. We have 132 reports that we have every year, and Presidency is worried about the time this is taking department, and it's instituted as part of the 20-year review. One of its evaluation projects that I mentioned, the National Evaluation Plan, is an evaluation of reporting, because they want to streamline it. Very often, we give the same information four times over. But as I said, we counted it the other day, 132 different reports. The quarterly review meetings, each DDG presents. The core business is civics and immigration. They present for 2 to 3 hours, and the others for short periods. We interrogate, we engage with them on why they haven't achieved. And we have people from the front line, from a mobile unit, a sample of people from hospitals, from various ports of entry, and they tell us if we're talking nonsense, because they are the ones who deal with the problems on the ground. So those meetings also help keep everyone on the same page, and we help to spot information that's a little bit shaky. This is the tool I'm nearly through, Chair, where because of the 132 reports, the DG and EXCO Executive Committee asked us to develop a compliance monitoring tool So we will give the DGVD reports of, a warning that in 2 or 3 weeks' time this or that report is due, then you'll pick up the phone and make sure that DG is on the ball and working on the report. And we'll get a copy of that report. We'll do a quick quality check. Then at the end of the month, to EXO, we'll say, this is the standard of compliance, but people are leaving this thing to juniors or not properly signing it off. So we'll give a report on the quality of reporting. But that database of reports, 132 reports, is a bit heavy, but it produces a wonderful database for research and evaluation studies going forward. So that explains how we're going to use compliance in a sort of positive way. Just to show you all the different structures finally that deal with reports, it's each branch, and don't forget the largest branches are 3,000-4,000 people, civics and immigration. So they have, when they have senior management meetings or their branch management meetings, each province has meetings, and they consider these reports. They meet in order to compile reports for quarterly review meetings. EXCO meets every 2 weeks. Am I right, EG? Every 2 weeks. Ministers management meeting as well. Department management meeting, chief directors and up meet every month. Then we have audit steering committee and external audit committees. The audit steering committee is one of about 5 structures to improve on the audit findings and deal with compliance issues. We have about 5 different committees looking at different ways we can improve our audit findings. I think that's all. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. In summary, Chair, this unit is the one which we're using as the gadget to test the pulse of the organization. As was saying, that internal audit was looking more on whether you complying with the regulations or not. But this unit is the one now which is taking those targets. For instance, in the month of April, we called top 900 managers in the department, and minister go to that staff and say, here is a strategic plan of the department which has been approved. On the 9th of May, I'm going to the public and say, this is what the department will be doing. Do you know this? If now we say, we'll be registering 648 beds per annum, then we ask one manager that says, stand up, and then say, your office, you are in Bloemfontein. What is your number of children which are contributing to this number? And then that manager said, I have to register 1,500 deaths in my area. So that number is the one now contributing to that 642,000. But at the end, we need now to monitor. They must come to us and say, I am not able to register the 1,500. Why? Mothers are coming to the hospital without naming the children. They are coming to the hospital without birth certificate. Once they leave, it's difficult for us to get them back. Once we get that information, I trigger thinking in the department to say, no, let's go to the Department of Health and check whether we can link our systems with theirs so that we know that in this hospital there were 20 children born, but there's only 10 registered. Where is the 10? So that's what this unit is dealing with. So we are really saying, I want to see why can't we achieve 100% of the targets which we set ourselves if we've got a bottom-up and top-down approach. So that is what this unit is responsible for. As we said, we're starting from very afar as we're having struggles even with setting our targets. Now we think we are there with the targets. Now we want to emphasize now on the monitoring and evaluation to say, why are we saying we issue 900,000 IDs for children turning 16, but are not able to achieve that? So we want now to get that information and understand it and be able to push. So that is the responsibility of the monitoring and evaluation. Now we will start with the internal audit. We get them, get them more governed by those regulations.
Afternoon, Madam Chair, Honourable Members, DG, and all present, all protocols observed. My name is Bevan Babuji. I'm from the National Treasury seconded to the Department of Home Affairs. And I think DG covered some of the background. So I will just start here. What I want to confirm is that the department has in fact established an internal audit function as required in terms of the law. The internal audit has a dual reporting line, one to the DG on the administrative matters that the DG spoke about, and the other functionally to the audit committee. Now, if we just look back a few years, internal audit has been a problem in the department for a bit now. The audit committee, the executive, and the auditor general have all been concerned about these things. And then you would find that if you look back in the auditor general's reports, the weaknesses of internal audit have been flagged there for a few years now. Now, this culminated sometime in October 2011 in the suspension of the health audit. That process has led to disciplinary proceedings and so forth, and that is still ongoing. It has been slow. We thought that it would be much quicker, but there are certain things that happened which the department is not directly in control of and which has delayed this process. Just by way of history, when I came from the Treasury, we anticipated that I would be there for about 3 months or so. But because of the delays, my stay was extended, which then brings us to the fourth bullet point there now, that I have to return to the National Treasury at the end of June because of operational requirements at the Treasury, and then we have already started the process of looking for a replacement until the disciplinary processes against the incumbent official is resolved, and then there's a better direction on where the department goes from there. The new audit committee that DG has already spoken about. Now, this audit committee was very carefully chosen so that we take members on with extensive public sector experience, and we were very fortunate in getting some very good people on that audit committee. One of the key parts of the internal audit committee was to lend its expertise to help build the internal audit function so that it starts functioning better and as would be expected in terms of international norms and standards. The Treasury Regulations expects that any internal audit function in government to also function in terms of the international standards for internal auditing. And as we proceed in the presentation, you will see that there's a little bit more to do to get internal audit up to that level. Now, having known the problems of internal audit, together with executive management, together with the audit committee and myself, we've put in place certain plans to improve the effectiveness of the internal audit function. We've made some headway in that regard, but we still find that there's more work to do in order to get to that state where I'm saying that, we operate and function in terms of, top standards. I just want to quickly go through the legislative requirements of an internal audit function. Firstly, there must be an internal audit function that reports to the accounting officer has to set up an internal audit function, and that's in place, as I have said, that there must be a terms of reference or a charter under which terms the internal audit must function, that's in place. Here is the third bullet there, says the internal audit must be conducted in accordance with the standards set by the Institute of Internal Auditors. That's a requirement in terms of the Treasury Regulations. At a last assessment in 2010-11, that was an independent assessment, and I'm going to talk about that shortly. Opinion of that research was that the internal audit function did not fully meet the requirements of professional standards, and certain work had to be done to bring it up to that level, and there's a slide later on which will portray that picture and what has been done to correct that situation. The internal audit function must prepare, must consult the audit committee and prepare a medium-term plan, a three-year plan, that has been done. Must prepare a one-year plan, that has also been done. Must also indicate the scope of audit for the year, for the audit to be done in a particular year, and that has been done. And must report quarterly to the audit committee, that has been done. What I do want to say is that about 3 weeks ago, the audit committee approved the three-year internal audit plan from 2013 up to 2016, which consisted of a plan for 2013-14 and then 2 years beyond. The audit committee also approved the internal audit charter, so the internal audit charter regulates the function of the internal audit function and has recommended changes to the audit committee charter, which will be approved by the DG. The internal audit function does report to all of the audit committee meeting, and there are no limitations. I can confirm that there are no limitation of scope on the function of the internal audit as it stands now. And the internal audit function also coordinates with the Office of the Auditor General and the Risk Management Unit and other assurance providers as we come across, in ensuring that we are not duplicating the work of each other and we are not contradicting each other's mandate. Now, I think this is where we start having a few problems, because it says here in terms of Treasury Regulation 3.2.11, which is the crux of what internal audit must do, it says internal audit function assists the accounting officer in maintaining efficient and effective control, and we need to evaluate the systems of risk management, etc. And it should cover the IT environment, reliability and integrity of financial and operational information, effectiveness of operations, safeguarding of assets and compliance. Now, the Auditor General has reported previously, and we've just received the audit finding for the interim audit just completed, and Auditor General is reporting that insufficient auditing has occurred in the IT environment, auditing of performance information, and audit of financial information. Now, this is largely a legacy, Madam Chair and members. You know, this issue was reported previously. We've tried to address it through crafting an audit plan which covered these types of audits. Unfortunately, we could not complete the audit plan, and hence the finding has reoccurred in this audit cycle. And because of that, Madam Chair, then internal audit cannot fully satisfy this requirement, which says that the previous requirement and this one are intertwined. So if that doesn't happen well, then this requirement also then is not fully met, given that we haven't fully executed the internal audit plan, certain audits were not done, then we could not provide a full independent view of the state of control in the department. This is what it looks like. The internal audit, the budget for the 2013-14 financial year is just under 21 million, made up of 11.5 million in compensation and 9 million in goods and services. In terms of number of people, there are 22 funded posts, of which 17 are filled, and we've recently made offers for three positions. One is the Director of IT and Continuous Audit, another for Deputy Director, IT and Continuous Audit, and for an Office Manager. Now, previously, the department did not have IT audit capacity, so these are new positions that have been created based on the understanding that the department is an IT-driven department and needed expertise in this area. So those are the people we brought on, well, we'll bring on board shortly. The office manager is also a new position, and it has been created so that the office manager can assist the internal auditors in better project and time management, and that is a huge problem. And later on you will hear them saying that one of the big concerns is that we just take too long from start to finish in an audit, and part of it is weaknesses in project management and time management. So the office manager is somebody who is going to monitor that and then report any deviations. And then currently there are two vacancies, two senior internal auditors, which we'll be looking for shortly. Madam Chair, members, this is what I alluded to earlier, that independent survey of the internal audit function was done in 2010. You will see there that they reported a number of weaknesses in July 2011, that's the pie chart on the left, and you will find that there were, 28 high-level findings were reported. over the past year and a half, we've managed to correct all of those high findings except one. There's one issue there you find in red that is related to having a system of IT and continuous auditing. Now that will be fixed as soon as the IT auditors come in. We have tasked them that one of the priority tasks will be setting up that system for us. So then that red will go away as well. But once that one is resolved, then in theory, in any event, we will be in compliance with the international standards for internal auditing, and then probably around December, January, we will commission another internal assessment before we go out and get an independent external assessment of internal audit based on how we are performing in accordance with the international standards. Now, these are some of the key steps that we have taken to address those findings reported by the external reviewers. We have extensively reviewed the internal audit methodology, so that's the internal audit framework, so that it was brought in line with international standards for internal auditing, which in any event is required in terms of our local legislation. We have trained internal audit staff in the application of that methodology. We have also introduced various checklists at critical points in the audit process so that quality is improved at the source. There was extensive on-the-job training on the technical aspects of internal audit, and some of that training is still ongoing as we speak. We have improved the systems for documenting and tracking the audit findings that have been issued, to see that management were fixing them, and where they were not being fixed, to report them to the audit committee and then to the executive so that they put pressure on management to fix the audit problems. We have improve the time management system so that there's a clear start and end date for auditing, and try to get auditors to meet those timelines. Also, we are struggling to get that right. You know, so internal auditors are still taking far too long to complete audit projects. We enhance the reporting to the audit committee. Now, in terms of how the internal audit function is that they are monitored by the audit committee in terms of the performance, and the key issues that are found in by internal auditors are reported to executive as well as to the audit committee. So what we've done is enhance the reporting to the audit committee so that they are able to perform their oversight role more effectively. I've already said that the appointment of the IT audit capacity is in progress. In fact, it's at an advanced stage. Appointment of the office manager is also similarly at an advanced stage. We have done some reorganization internally within the Chief Directorate Audit Services so that we can improve productivity, so that we could take people who were underperforming in one area and putting them in other areas where they could utilize their skills much better. We have extended the use of computers in auditing, computer-aided audit techniques. However, it's still at basic level in the department at the moment, and we have to increase our ability to use the use computer-assisted audit techniques much better. Now, the committee asked us to also speak specifically about audit as a foreign mission. And I'm going to speak more about that just now. First, to say at this point that we have been working closely with the internal auditors from Turco to establish synergies in how we cover auditing at the foreign missions across the world. These are the findings, Chair and members, that the auditors Auditor General read in last year's audit report, and I just want to give account of progress against each one. Here, the auditors are saying that the internal auditors did not submit reports to the audit committee every quarter. That has been fixed. We are doing that religiously now. The internal audit function did not have a three-year rolling plan. That has been fixed. As I said, you know, the plan for the 2013-14 period and beyond has been already approved. The purpose, authority, and responsibility of the internal audit function was not defined in a charter. Now, that has been resolved as well. the internal audit function did not have an internal audit plan for the first year of the 3-year strategic plan. That too has been resolved. The internal audit function did not evaluate reliability and integrity of financial and operational information. Now that has been partially resolved. The remaining part that needs to be fully addressed is that we have to finish our yearly internal audit program. If we don't, then we are still going to have gaps in the reporting. Now that is a priority task in getting internal auditors to perform better so that they stick to timelines, that they stick to the quality aspects of audit, and we can complete the internal audit. I think Mrs. Ganossi will give a brief account of our progress in terms of the 2012-13 plan, and then you will get an idea of where we are struggling. I think we had 39 audits planned for the year, and as at today we've only managed to fully complete 9 of them, and there are a few others in progress, but Mrs. Kelsey will give further information on that just now. In terms of the audit of foreign missions, there are 54 foreign missions around the world where DHA has its own staff doing DHA work. Those missions are audited by the Home Affairs Internal Audit Function. All other missions have DERCO staff that do home affairs work, and they are audited by the DERCO internal auditors. We have already started dialogue with the internal auditors from DERCO to ensure that we receive their audit reports that point to weaknesses in the home affairs function at the mission, so that we can take steps to help them to address it. We do not audit missions randomly. There is a systematic basis of risk rating our missions, and that informs which ones we need to audit. In 2010-11, we audited Luanda in Angola and Kinshasa in the DRC. In 2011-12, we audited Accra and Ghana, New Delhi in India, and Nairobi in Kenya. In 2012-13, we did not manage to finish our audit then, and hence the foreign missions that we intended to audit were not audited, so we simply now carried them into the new plan for 2013-14, and they are Vintuk in Namibia, Maputo in Mozambique, Sao Paulo in Brazil, Canberra in Australia, Toronto in Canada, and Bampan in Swaziland. We've also, on the instruction of the executive and the audit committee, been asked to work together with the internal auditors from DERCO to audit two missions together with them. We've agreed that it will be Asmara in Eritrea, and then one other mission which we will agree upon in due course. The current challenges that we are facing, Madam Chair, is the finalization of the issue of the incumbent chief audit executive, the head audit there. The next challenge is the capability of internal audit staff, which leads us to have long delays in the finalization of internal audit reports, which leads us to have problems with the quality of the internal audit reports that do come out and lack the desired usefulness to people who need to act on those reports and put things right. So the quality is in question. One of the challenges is that given the scale and the diversity of the department's operations, what is the optimum operating model for the internal audit function? If we cut our minds a few years back, then you would recall that the internal audit function was outsourced. Then there was a modality which said part of it would be outsourced, part of it would be internal, and it moved to an internal, fully internally functioning internal audit model. Now, none of these models have actually worked very well. So we needed to apply our minds to say, what is the problem? What is the optimal functioning? And where can we get most benefit in the investment in internal audit? And I'll speak to that just now. Thank you. The remedial steps, Madam Chair, that we are taking to address the problems that I've just outlined now, I've said already the process to appoint an acting chief audit executive has already started. We have developed a number of tools to ensure quality, to ensure that the time spent on audits are properly tracked and remedial action is taken, and project management tools. What we have to do is improve the implementation of these tools so that we can get maximum benefit out of them. At the moment, we don't do these things too well. We are concentrating on self-development. We have been keeping a close eye on performance management of staff in the process. We have elaborated and have agreed that a co-sourcing model will be tried. We have already started the process of appointing a pool of service providers, internal audit service providers, to work with the internal capacity to do our audits. And there's an elaborate explanation for this, is because what we'd like to do is to appoint the outside firms to audit at the source. So we cut down on traveling for our internal staff and cut down on travel costs in general as a result thereof. We are going to task the incoming internal audit, the IT audit specialist to design and implement a system of continuous auditing, which will help us to cover more auditing at lower cost and more efficiently. Thank you, Madam Chair, and
good afternoon, Chair and honourable members, to the members of HealthAid. Chair, I just want to touch on a few issues. I think the one being the concern of the audit committee, obviously the fact that the finalisation of the processes around the labour relations issues of the CAE taking too long. So we are concerned about that. The other is that based on the number of projects that were approved, the 39 projects, 9 have been successfully completed, 5 are still in progress, 3 of which the auditors are awaiting management comments, 2 are about 90% completed, and then also out of the 39, time has been taken to do 3 ad hoc projects which are urgent outside of the risk-based audit plan that needed to be done. So when we look at the challenges within the department that BEPS has just gone through, the audit committee is obviously concerned, and our discussion with the minister was around how much training can one do in an organization. You know, and the minister is talking about possible a training academy, eventually setting up a training academy for internal audit within Home Affairs. But for now, we need to sustain what we have, but we can't do that just through training. So the co-sourcing model is probably what's going to work for the institution at this point in time. You're getting people with the technical know-how to come in and run with those projects and probably use our resources at present as part of the project that they'll undertake. So I think those are the points that I wanted to touch on. There has been an improvement from the time we came into now on what we receive in our audit as part of internal audit. But I think the concern is still that the delays around the completion of audit reports is taking too long, which could possibly mean that by the time the audit committee sees the report, it's probably 6 months later, it's late. The information is probably stale, because if it's an environment like monitoring and evaluation, for example, it's dynamic, it's changing, they're constantly doing stuff to improve what they're doing in that area. By the time internal audit has to perhaps issue their reports, monitoring and evaluation has changed the environment and put in new controls, which would render the internal audit report possibly useless. So those are the issues that we're currently dealing with. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. No, I can add, Chair, I said the issue of the, but this internal audit is one of the technical areas where you need people with certain expertise. But when departments were starting these units, they put people without those skills. into those areas. So now you sit with that, it means that now you need to go back and now and reskill people, but you can't reskill them forever. You need now to shift them and get the new blood and all that. Having the core sourcing is what we think will help once you are building that skill. And then at a point, if you have to shift people, that's what you do. But the only what we're looking at is you can see that the number of posts which we have is only 20 now, two posts, which now gives us also that ability that we can do that. But we've already appointed the directors, that level of management, which is what we are dealing with. But let me stop, as I said, you know, there are the two reports which we have brought into the committee today.
Thank you, DG, and the team. Honourable members, that was the input from the DG and the members of the internal audit committee. We were joined by other two members of our committee. We were joined by Honourable De Freitas, who had an apology, and Honourable Gam, who was in a workshop. Welcome, Honourable members, and Honourable Mnisi. We are dealing with the two reports from the Mr. Tennyson's unit, and the other one, the internal audit committee. I became worried when I look at the appointment of an IT audit capacity person, as well as the manager and the chief audit executive, because you know our department takes long in appointing staff. And that gave me tantrums in my time. I just thought that, oh God, we're going to have actors again here. I hope we will not have actors in this unit. DG, please appoint staff so that we don't have a problem of people accounting properly. Honourable members, that was the input by the department. The Ms. Kinosi, you mentioned that you needed something like a training academy. And I know, I'm sure we do have a training academy in the Department of Home Affairs. Won't it be proper if maybe we have a branch of internal auditors or auditors in that learning academy, instead of, you know, having a parallel structure out of the, or a parallel structure running somewhere when we have a learning academy already in place. Honourable members, that was the report from the two units. It's time for questions. May I note your hands? I notice Honourable Marcella. I'm sure you will have to explain how to use these advanced stages. When are the appointments going to be done? Honourable Marcella?
I'll be very brief. The first question is, I'd like to know the audit charter. What is it that it says? And perhaps if you could preface just to hit the head, what is it that says? The other question is, who is responsible for the compliance within the department, and what is the level of that presence? Is it someone at the SMS band, and at what level, at that level really, in the... The other question is there a dedicated capacity in building, I mean in the business units, to do with compliance, or is it simply one of those general management issues Because if we are to deal with the compliance, it means that we're dealing with corruption in the department. There is an anti-corruption DDG. It's a very serious matter, and if you look at the compliance, there has been instances, in fact all the time, when the DD reports, I mean when the Auditor General reports, you'll find that issues of compliance on systems of financial reporting and all those tend to be issues on a systematic reporting system. I mean, yes, and I think that is something that we need to look into. Well, on the issues around auditing in general, I think one is just worried about when you look at the years that have been highlighted on the graph. I just want to understand the difference between the 2011 one and the 2013. If you could just focus on that. Because I also heard you mentioning 28%, which was not the same color as the other one. And I thought that might have been a mistake, because it's 11% versus 1%, not 28% versus 1%. But if you could actually touch on that graph as you explain it to us. And I would like to know why were the other missions left out when the report was made? Because yes, we are told that there are missions that were audited, and there are those that were not audited in the 2012-2013. I would like to understand why were those left out of the auditing. Thanks, Chair. I think that's for now. Oh, the last one, Chairperson, which was my very first question, by the way, that I would have wanted to ask. Why is this Chief Audit Executive, why is that person under investigation? What is it that this person is alleged to have done? And how far is that issue from decision? At least the committee should be briefed on that. Thank you very much.
DG, over to you and to your team, of course.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will take the question around the management one, the one for internal audit. I will still leave with the internal audit. Chair, who's responsible for the compliance? Well, maybe let me start with the appointment first. Where we are, Chair, the director is approved by the minister, has already been approved. So that is to issue of a letter to the recommended candidate. And the one for internal audit, I've already signed the submission for the appointment. It's a question of getting. So I suspect that they either start on 1st of May, or if you now cause them to send notice, it might be 1st of June, the two. One of the office manager is the one, I think it's a lower, what level is that? Was my approved level 12. Yeah, so if it is the ASD, it goes to the Chief agent to the DDG of HR, so the two are not there. So that's where we are with those, also will be able to deal with that. That has already been approved. It was approved by the minister. Minister has already signed the submission for the appointment of the director IT. Where we are now is the question of just issuing the letters and all that. I'll check that with the HR. May. There's two positions. The director IT, I know, is a male.
Yes. The deputy director of IT is a male. The office manager is a female.
Okay. Then, Chair, with the question of who is responsible for compliance and is that dedicated unit? No, Chair, compliance is the responsibility of each and every manager. Because remember, is that I am, as this manager A, I must deal with the responsibilities. Indeed, it says when you procure, you need to have three quotations. So when I'm doing that, I need to make sure that before I approve, those things are complied with. But what we are doing now in the department, then an internal audit assists to go and check whether are the people complying. But the issue of compliance is the responsibility of each and every man, anyone who is executing the function, because these rules and regulations are made known
people are trained on them, so they're supposed to be doing that. As I'm making an example with the issue of, let's take naive payment of creditors within 30 days. It is a responsibility of the manager, they go and procure, then they receive an invoice, so they must make sure that they pay that invoice within 30 days. And now what you do, then now you've got internal audit who goes and check, are the people complying with those? If they don't, it's what now we need to report and deal with it. But again, as I was saying now, that within the accounts and tasks, that as well to say, what we are also looking at, in addition to the unit which lies under Dr. Kansi, we want to work on that unit so that it can have a teeth and can put mechanisms to check these things before they reach the age of non-compliance. For instance, we've implemented a system called the track and trace, the one we're using for IDs. We're implementing that now for an invoice to say, once an officer receives an invoice, must put it on the track and trace, then it counts. Once it goes to 10 days, we must be able to see whether this invoice has been sitting, now is reaching the 10 days, why it goes to 25 days, so that at that point we're able to make interventions as we go along. So that's what we are building in the department to make sure that we do that. As the committee also is aware that what we did, we also have appointed finance staff at provinces. So each province has got a director finance. Now, director finance now has been given now a deputy director finance, a deputy director HR, and as well as the procurement assistant director. So that now they've got those tools which will assist them to deal with that. So that's what we are trying in the department. But at the end, it is the responsibility of management to deal with the issues of compliance. Then I think that all the other questions now are for the audit committee, so that I can touch on this issue of why is the CAE under the investigation. Chair, it was a simple issue of performance, nothing else. As we said that in 2011, let's spark that process. In 2010-11, we received that report, which is what we're talking about, which was the evaluation of the external audit, because the internal audit, you need to appoint at an interval an external to say, are you doing things right? So in that process, that's what we did that. And then even the issue of not able to execute what an internal audit is supposed to be auditing. So it was not an issue of corruption, nothing. It was just an issue of performance. That's where we are. I guess, as you know, that there's a process to deal with that. You need to follow the issue of writing a letter, person response, get his representative, and goes all that process. So it does take long, but there's nothing you can do. You have to follow those processes, because if you don't, you push and jump a stamp. For instance, as an example, the person said to us, I need now my laptop with all my information. When you ask it whether after 2 months, you have to give at that point. You can't say, hey, why you been sitting, why you didn't ask it on day one? You are asking now. I need to compare. But if I can say I proceed, even if I didn't give you that, because that information was with you, why do you need now? Then you can lose that case just on technicality. So that's why, you know, this thing needs to take time. We want to make sure that technically I must not do anything wrong. And that's how they people they follow. Once they know that they might have a weak case in terms of merits, they deal with you on the process, and once you jump a step, then that's when you have a problem. Hence, the minister took a decision, the one was that, look, we can't wait without getting somebody, both a person from National Treasury. Now the approach, in fact, even at that point, we were in part of the disciplinary process. When we brought in somebody from Treasury, we got letters from their lawyers and said it's already constructive dismissal because of appointed. So I said, no, we didn't appoint, it's seconded. Then they were able now to say, okay, it's fine. Now, with the one which we're going to be doing now, we are looking to go to the audit firm and get a sample must appoint on a contract. So that we must be clear that we're not appointing in that post, because once you do that,
then that person will say it was a cost factor. It would change everything and be technical and say, I was dismissed before my case was heard. So that's what we're dealing with today on this matter.
Thank you. Honourable Member, thanks for your question. Let me start with them in the sequence that you've raised them. You've asked what is the internal audit charter, what does it contain? Let me just say there are two different charters that are in play. One is the internal audit charter. Now, earlier on I said that, internal audit by law, the way it is structured needs to report to two different entities, if you want to call it that, one to a director general in an administrative way and then functionally to a committee, the audit committee. So the internal audit charter basically regulates that that reporting line and protects internal audit function from undue influence from the management. Do you need me to go into more detail? It basically says, what internal audit can and can't do, what are the reporting lines. Then there's an audit committee charter. I don't know where you want Mrs. Kanofi as the chair of the committee to maybe speak about it, then I'll come back.
Through your chair to the honourable member. In terms of the audit committee charter, we appointed by minister, so the minister can hire and fire us, I suppose. The charter deals with the ultimate responsibilities and the authority of the committee. So really what it does is we at any point in time can have any meetings with the Auditor General on an annual basis. For example, we'll have a one-on-one meeting with the Auditor General on the issues around the audit report. We can have in-committee meetings with internal audit, which we do. We assess the effectiveness of internal audit on an annual basis. But we are basically responsible in terms of our responsibilities. We need to assess the risk management, internal control, external audit, the financial information, and the internal audit of the organization. So at any point in time, if you looked at our agendas, our meetings would cover those aspects of the business. So it's more your governance aspects, your risk management, your internal control. On an annual basis, for example, as part of the annual report, you'll see that the audit committee will issue a report as part of the annual report. It will also be based on an assessment by internal audit on whether or not the internal controls in the environment are operating effectively and efficiently for the financial year under review. So we, by law, should have at least 4 meetings per annum. And so we would ordinarily have 4 meetings per annum, and we may have 2 special audit committee meetings that deal with just the financial statements. So the first would be the 31st of May, where we look at the draft financial statement before we submit them to the Auditor General. The second one would be the 31st of July, or close to the 31st of July, where we deal with the audited financial statements by then and the draft management letter. So in essence, that's really what the audit committee charter would entail. Thank you, Chair.
And add on also on the internal audit charter, because remember that internal audit is to check what management is doing. It's trying to make sure that, as a DG, as an example, I can't say to Intel, they say today I want to go audit supply chain management. I can't say as a DG, no, you can't do that. Therefore, that independence is what is strengthening. So now you know that the relationship is not at the point that I can block as a DG. If there is a report, for instance, they go and do a report, they find that I signed a document which is outside my delegation. I can't say you can't do that report. Like this presentation of today, I can't as a DG and say, before you put that the presentation, I'll check and say, take page 1. No, put page 3. But in the department report, I can do that. But on the internal audit, there is that line, so that they must be independent of the DG. Worst get the audit committee as well. If there is something which they pick it up through the internal audit, they won't come to me and say, we're taking this report now to Auditor General, or we're taking this report to the minister. If right now the meeting between the audit committee and the minister, I am not part of it. I cannot sit in that meeting. So the audit committee, if there are issues which are not going right, I must be free to raise those issues. So those charters are managing that relationship so it is clear, it is understood.
Thank you. Honorable Member, I must apologize for the confusion on the graph, but I think let's look at each one separately. The graph on the left is what that is actually portraying is that the people that did the review had reported 40 deficiencies in total on the internal audit function. So there were 28 high-level findings, there were 11 medium-level, and so forth. The graph on the right as of April 2013 illustrates how much of that we have fixed already. So the green portion shows that out of that 40, 34 have been fixed. Five we didn't have to take action, they resolved themselves somehow, and then one remains to be resolved going into the new year. That's what these graphs are intended to illustrate. There's one more to answer. Yeah. Honorable Member, what happened here is that in the 2012-13 plan, we were supposed to audit some of these missions that are reflected in the, you see, Vitruk, Maputo, etc. Some of those were supposed to have been done the year before. We didn't get on to doing that because of the problems we mentioned earlier. Remember we said there were 39 audits. These formed part of those 39 audits, and we didn't get around to doing them. So what has happened? The audit committee has now approved that we do them in the coming year.
When Minister says we need to get an academy, it doesn't mean that we create a new one. But I think within the existing one, we need to prioritize this issue of training of the auditors. And as we know that even in the country is still a challenge, this profession of auditors as a profession. So now we need to try and do put an effort in training them.
The issue of DICO and Home Affairs, especially foreign missions, where we had, do they call it contingent assets or something like that? Can you explain as to how far is the ratification between them?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since the audit report was issued, that matter has received a lot of attention. In fact, the process that started even before that audit report was issued. The department has gotten some extra resources to reconcile those accounts going back from 2008-09 all the way to the current year. That process is almost complete. We will start the internal audit, that is, we'll start the audit of that next week. We got some professional, the financial accounting people from the CFO's office appointed KPMG, people from KPMG to come and do those reconciliations. But before they get into the books now, we just want to have an independent view of that before they get reported. So there's been a lot of work done in that area.
Thank you. Any more hands? We're all happy. Honorable Khasibone.
Thank you, Dr. Sir. All I wanted to ask was, what do you think can be done to prevent the long delays of the in the finalization of internal audit projects? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. About the question, Mr. Babuja.
One question about, I would like to know what happened or what has been enhanced in time management system mentioned on slide 13. Thank you, Chair.
And also just to follow up on what the questions that was asked by Mr. Honorable Masla regarding missions that were not audited. Maybe they won't be audited for this financial year and we will be getting Auditor General's opinion as a qualified or unqualified report. Now there are these other missions that are left out of auditing. How do we handle that?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members. In terms of what we're going to do about the detail in issuing the audit report, I think that ties in with the question. The second question is, what has changed? So let me just say that just our time management system wasn't up to scratch. So what we've done since the beginning of the new financial year is to develop this new time management system, which in effect allocates time to each auditor on the project. As they audit, they are supposed to then submit these timesheets to the office manager on a weekly basis, and as soon as the office manager will then notice that we are going to overrun, will then bring it to the attention of the chief audit executive to investigate immediately what is the cause of that overrun and try to correct that. Now, overruns are caused by a number of things. One is that management themselves may not be cooperating with the auditor, they're not availing information on time, then the audit executive will then need to intervene to make sure that that information comes quickly and in the form that the auditors are looking for. In certain cases, it might just be inefficiency on the part of the internal auditors themselves. And again, the chief audit executive with the project with the project manager in charge of that audit will need to address what is the problem. Maybe the person needs an additional assistance. Maybe we need to put more people on the project and so forth. But the time management tool is really designed to flag where there are problems, and then that will, as a diagnostic tool, and then to really look at what's going on and then to address it. There might be a couple of different ways to address it. And then in terms of the question, Madam Chair, that you raised, unfortunately we do then carry the risk that those missions that we have not audited, if there are problems there, then we have missed picking up those problems and reporting it so that they could be fixed. Unfortunately, that is the risk of not auditing on time and auditing properly.
I'm sure, are all the questions answered? Making us.
Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to add to Gerson's last comment about the issues about the missions that may not have been audited. When the missions are selected, they are done on a risk basis. So Home Affairs internal audit would have identified the risks within each mission, and they would then prioritize the ones with the highest risk to be audited within a financial year.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wasn't going to ask, but now the last comment is just, if you could just explain, how do you define risk? How do you know the emission is of higher risk than the other? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member.
I give you all the difficult ones.
Yeah, no. So what happens is that there's a unit within the within Home Affairs, which is called the Foreign Office Coordination Unit, which deals with the mission abroad. They have a few criteria on which to risk rank the missions. One of them is hardship, the political situation, and I just forgot the third one. But they have three core criteria. Then they have a risk rating for each of our foreign missions. What internal audit does is looks at a couple of other criteria in terms of what documents are issued, the number of documents, the value of revenue generated, the political situation in the country, what the external auditors have reported previously in terms of that mission, what the counter-corruption unit has reported in terms of fraud and corruption in those missions. So we put all of those things together on a matrix, and then we use that as a basis to risk rank our mission. So internal audit has one rating based on the factors that are spoken about. The Foreign Affairs, the Foreign Officer Coordination Unit has a risk rating. We put that together and then we determine which missions to audit.
Thank you, Prabhupada. Okay. Did you want to think, or do you want to maybe add?
That's not, Chapter starts to inform the committee as that on the 14th of May, the department would appear before SCOPA, that we have got the opportunity just to inform the committee that is aware of that, 14th of May.
The Home Affairs will be appearing before SCOPE on the 14th of May. Portfolio committee members are invited to attend to the meeting, to attend the meeting. Time, I'm sure it's usually 9 o'clock or half past 9. Yeah, I think we have those A's at least of meetings where we can check. Yeah, for the 14th of May, honorable members. DG, I want to thank you and your team for all the good work that you are doing, and we hope we'll get a better opinion this time. Thank you very much for your good work, Mr. Kanasin. Mr. Babuji Meginusi, thank you so much for your work. You are excused. Oh, Mr. Se, Mr. want to say
thank you, sir. I been the Funubuza regarding the request to have the discussion with the department on the privatization of the permit unit. When are we going to have a session with them? Because the city is here, so I was just tempted to take that.
It's up to the committee to
involve.
Okay. Okay, thank you, DC, we'll do that. And our committee meeting for the 14th will be postponed because of the department will be appearing before SCOPE, so we won't have a meeting on the 14th. DG, please leave quietly because we are still busy with our meeting. Thank you, thank you. We're going to continue with our meeting. We have the the report of the department. We were supposed to have adopted it last week, you remember. It did not have all the entities. IEC was not included, so we asked the secretary and the researcher to work on the recommendations of the IEC, and they did that. So I think I'm going to ask Adam to take us through the recommendations so that we could adopt the report of the department. Over to you, Mr. Sam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, there were no significant changes in the document, but all small small changes that were recommended by the members. So we'll just go to the last page and the four bullet points just before the conclusion. These are the things that we didn't cover in meeting last week, and these were just the recommendations that were raised from the minutes that the committee recommended to the IEC. So 4.18, the IEC should consider plans with regard to political intimidation when training staff during elections. The IEC work towards strengthening the political liaison committee. The IEC should be innovative in attracting voters to come to voting stations during elections, such as having fancy dress parties and best voter. Just innovation. Voter education of the IEC should be simpler and focus on what voters need to know. The IEC should address the audit findings raised by the Auditor General during 2011-12.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Those are the recommendations for the IEC honorable members. We won't do all the others because we did that last week. Are we all comfortable with it? Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Okay. It's 2011-2012. Okay. May we have a mover and a seconder for the Department of Home Affairs budget vote? Mayor Asibone? Okay. A seconder? Mr. Tim. We won't deal with the minutes, Honorable Members, because now I just got some of them today. Can we adopt our minutes in our next meeting? We have four sets of minutes. And next week we must adopt our minutes, Honorable Members. Will that be in order for next week? Thank you, Honorable Member. We have our budget vote on the 9th. We will be having our next meeting on the 7th. Yeah, on the 7th. May I thank you, Honorable Members, for your contributions to this committee. The meeting is adjourned.
because I do have extra room there on there, but I have to put my ears. Okay.